Today's topic will concern the weakly nonlinear analysis of long wavelength waves propagating in the context of Glasgow theory, and the calculation of the heat fluxes that lead to modelization, so-called lambda of weak closure. So let us consider Alvin waves as an example of the kind of wave we can consider. This is not restrictive. The same analysis can apply to magnetosonic waves or, in general, any kind of long wavelength plasma wave propagating in this plasma, collisionless plasma. This Alvin wave is going to be assumed to propagate along a strong ambient magnetic field taken in the x direction. I mean, the previous exposition of yesterday was done in a context where B was pointing in the z direction. Sorry about that, but I didn't want to change all my equations. So these waves can be amenable to an asymptotic expansion directly from the Vlasov-Maxwell equation. Usually, long wavelength dynamics of such types of MHD waves are performed from the whole MHD reduction of the plasma description I presented yesterday. But in fact, it is possible to perform this expansion directly on the Vlasov-Maxwell system. And the assumption, the underlying assumption of all this thing is that the scales are large compared to the ion Larmor radius, and the amplitudes are small enough to keep linear dispersive effects comparable to nonlinearities. So it's not the kind of expansion that would lead to modulational equations of the nonlinear Schrödinger type. To get nonlinear Schrödinger, you basically have to have a strongly dispersive wave. So the underlying carrying wave will be almost linear, and it's only the envelope on long times and large scales that is modulated and obeys the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. Here, we are talking about another type of expansion, the long wave expansion, and it falls in the context, it falls in the category of equation that of KdV type. So this kind of asymptotic expansion aims at describing the underlying wave as well as its nonlinear evolution, and not only its envelope. So when I will call later on the equation derivative nonlinear Schrödinger equation, it is not at all in the same class as Schrödinger equation. It is in the same class as KdV. So what is the reductive perturbative expansion? You consider Vlasov-Maxwell and the distribution function f, and you expand it in terms of an equilibrium distribution function f0 plus corrections, epsilon times fr0 plus epsilon squared fr1, etc. And you perform the same kind of expansion on all fields, like the magnetic field, B, and the electric field. So the equilibrium distribution function has to satisfy Vlasov equation at dominant order, and so it is assumed to be rotationally symmetric around the direction of the ambient field. So that's the same kind of things that was the same constraint that appeared last yesterday in the context of pure linearized theory. If you remember, we had this equation where in the end you obtain that d by d phi of f0 was forced to be equal to 0, that leads to this rotationally symmetric distribution function. And moreover, we assume, but we are not obliged to, but we assume for simplicity, that the underlying distribution function is also symmetric relatively to forward and backward velocities along the direction of magnetic field. So it excludes the presence of drifts at the dominant order. But I mean, of course, this could be this constraint could be relaxed. So now, if what do we do about scales? So we, as I mentioned, you have to stretch the coordinate system, and the stretching is done in a way that provides the distinguished limit. I mean, we have to have the maximum number of terms in the resulting equations, the linear and nonlinear terms, and also we have to have the solubility condition satisfied. So, you, for example, it is necessary to scale the transverse directions y and z slower than the longitudinal direction. So, the longitudinal direction is scaled like epsilon squared, and the transverse direction like epsilon cubed. And I remind you that the perturbation of the distribution function is about an epsilon. And the time, the slow time under which the evolution takes place, is going to be governed by epsilon to the 4. So writing the velocity in a cylindrical coordinate system, we have, like I mentioned yesterday, the form for the velocity, the gradient in velocity space, involving the unit vector n in the direction transverse to the magnetic field, and its orthogonal vector t. So now, you just turn the crank. You have the relativity of Maxwell, you have all these expansions, and you just substitute these scalings and these expansions in the Vlasov Maxwell system and obtain a hierarchy of equations. So here I stopped at order 4. In fact, you even have to go at order 5 for the equation I will mention at the end. So as you can imagine, this leads to a system of solubility condition, because these equations are basically linear equations with right-hand side, and the linear operator is has some degenerate kernel, so non-zero kernel. So at some point you have to obey solubility condition. So what are the right-hand sides here? Sigma 1 to sigma 4, they are given in terms of the product of zero solar distribution function times the electric and magnetic field at order S, plus, you know, nonlinear terms involving the perturbed distribution function and the perturbed fields. And from this zeroth order equation, we get that F0 has to be rotationally symmetric, as I mentioned. And then from this one and the sequels, you obtain constraint about the relation between electric field and magnetic field. And generally what you get, generally what you get is a relation between electric field and magnetic field which takes this form for any p larger or equal to zero, and what it follows is that, for example, the parallel perturbation of the magnetic field is not present at order zero. You have to wait to further order to get something relevant, non-zero, and you obtain, when you average now the equation for FR0 over phi, as you see here, you have an equation like this. You can take the average over phi, this will cancel, and you get the average over phi of sigma R0, which has to be equal to zero. That's a solubility condition. And this leads to this equation for the perturbed distribution function, the first one. And this equation is rewritten in this form, where we have defined an operator here, d, curl d, which involves the derivative respect to perpendicular velocity and parallel velocity. So in a sense, in the spirit of this expansion is a little bit analogous to the guiding center theory that Pierre-Louis Sullien presented. We have exactly the same kind of assumptions and expansions that come into play. Yeah.
Yeah. That means that you have a necessary condition.
Yeah. If you can solve. I mean, once you ensure that the average of a phi is zero for sigma r, then you can solve explicitly for FR zero. No problem. Yeah. And so what you get is this, which gives an explicit formulation for FR0 plus an element of the kernel, which is independent of phi. It turns out that if you work out a little bit the algebra, you find that FR0 bar is equal to 0. So now you go to the next order, and you look for an equation for F1. And F1, first of all, the equation for F1 that was here has the same kind of deal. You can multiply average over phi to get a to get some constraints, and the constraint you get is that, for example, you have a relation between electric field and magnetic field. And I mean, I won't go into the details of all this algebra, of course. Here, what I would like to mention is the following, which is this important formula. I have an explicit form for F1, except here that I will only be able to capture the fluctuating parts, and one of the main, the most important part of the set distribution function is the one which is independent of phi and which will be more difficult to capture and will be captured later on. So at this stage, I'm able to calculate the fluctuating F1 in terms of F0, which is calculated before. I will denote for the later on the perturbed magnetic field intensity, which is defined here, by A, which involves the longitudinal magnetic field and the perturbed magnetic field, the perpendicular magnetic field. Divergence 3 gives you a relation for B parallel 1. So you have extracted some information, basic information. What you would like to do is to recover the traditional dispersion relation for your wave. So in order to do that, you have to not only perform the solubility condition by averaging over phi, but you have to apply some other kinds of operations on the basic equation. Like for this one, for example, you want to multiply, integrate over velocity space after multiplying by v perp and summing over the species on the two side of the equation for F2. And if you do that, you will get constraints involving d phi of F2 in terms of v perp 0, and in the right-hand side you would get something of this form, where now I have defined the parallel velocity and pressure and perpendicular pressure in terms of the equilibrium distribution function in the usual form. P parallel is like integral of v parallel squared times F0. P perp is like the integral of v perp squared times F0, v perp squared over 2 times F0. And the density here. So on the right-hand side, this one is easily evaluated, and this one also, thanks to Maxwell's equation. And what you get is the famous dispersion relation for the Alvin waves. So you remember here at the beginning when I was doing my stretching of coordinates, I was introducing here a lambda. So I was sitting in a frame of reference moving at the velocity of the wave, velocity of the linear wave. But this velocity lambda was still not determined at this level, so it was an unknown. So this unknown change of variable now turns out to be prescribed at order 3 or 2 by this relation here. So lambda is the dispersion relation, and you find that you recover in the case where the plasma is isotropic, where parallel and perpendicular pressure are the same. You recover that the Alvin speed, lambda squared, is indeed b squared over 4 pi rho, the traditional Alvin velocity. But in the case where the parallel and perpendicular pressure are different, then you can have a contribution of this form that can lead also to some instabilities. You immediately recognize that if p parallel is too large, lambda squared will become negative, and this is called the Fayol's instability, analogous to a pipe full of water, and that starts to be unstable. So you have also other kinds of instability, kind of mirror instability, all kinds of things that derived from anisotropy of the underlying plasma. So here in the SQL, I will assume that lambda squared is positive. So now this gives you only the linear stage of the problem. If you want to go a little bit further, you have to apply the same kind of techniques at the next orders. For example, if you now look at the solubility condition for F3, together with the quasi-neutrality constraint that is resulting from the Maxwell's equation, from the Poisson equation, you obtain an equation that describes here F bar 1. And F bar 1 is the interesting part. F bar 1, as I mentioned, was not determined early on. It's only at this level that you can find it. And what is the equation for F bar 1? The equation has the form V parallel minus lambda times d xi of F bar 1 equals something which depends on known things. Okay? And of course, here you see that you will have a problem when V parallel equals lambda, which is the lambda resonance. Okay, so at this point, we already find something interesting. So at this level, you just rewrite. I just rewrite here things in an explicit form involving the electric potential defined in terms of parallel electric field, and the non-trivial parallel electric field only arises at order 3, plus a correction here, which involves non-local operators, but these non-local operators are actually not a problem because they can be absorbed in definitions of phi. So one gets a relation of the form d xi of F1 here, if you divide by V parallel minus lambda, equal R. Here you have no problem because you have V parallel minus lambda on both sides, plus a chi term, which actually contains all the singular contribution, because this SR here do not depend on V parallel minus lambda. So you capture all the singular contribution in this term here. So now what is the technique to solve the equation for F1? Well, I will be inspired by a paper by Mulus and Wheeler in 1988. This paper actually looks at the same kind of problem here, using a mixed framework where all the equations are the fluid equations of the whole MHD except for the determination of the pressure, which is given by the guiding center theory. And in this paper, the same kind of equation is derived using this mixed formulation where you have all the complicated nonlinear dynamics of the velocity governed by fluid equations and the pressure determined by a kinetic equation, okay, the guiding center equation. So in this paper, there is an interesting remark, is that instead of going through the complex plane and looking at the lambda damping by the usual I epsilon kind of technique that Yves Elkins mentioned and that most students dislike, here a similar thing, I think actually it's exactly the same thing, but it's presented in a different context, is to say, well, I mean, at this level here, you have an equation, okay, that involves only the fast time scale, the time scale associated with the fast propagation of the wave. But as V parallel equal lambda, it turns out then that the time scales have to, a slower time scale has to be introduced, the tau time scale here. So by saying that the singularity can be removed, this singularity can be removed if you consider evolution on two different time scales and you capture this this resonance by actually writing now an ordinary differential equation for chi instead of writing just a purely algebraic formulation. So, and the goal is just to now solve this differential equation. There is no problem to solve it. It's non-singular. And it, the solution takes this form, chi, which now depends on epsilon, okay? And epsilon, then you can, of course, bring it to zero later on. Chi is something which depends on initial condition plus the driving term here on the right-hand side, I mean, that's a simple algebra. I mean, solving an ordinary differential equation of this form. So now, what do you do? You do well. At this level, if I take the limit of epsilon goes to zero, and since I'm only interested in the integral of chi over v parallel, I can just consider this term and take the limit as epsilon goes to zero. And in the formulation here, you see that as I take the limit as epsilon goes to zero of this kind of term here, I will immediately have something of this form, p principal value of this integral, 1 over v parallel minus lambda times df over dv parallel times s, plus something associated with the pole in complex plane, if you want. But here, it pops up naturally from the integral. This contribution, singular contribution, that actually turns out to be proportional to the Hilbert transform of SR, Hilbert transform with respect to the space variable, psi. Okay, so here at this level, there is nothing mysterious. I mean, it's just purely algebra, pure algebra. And I will call GR the operator acting on S, which now is not a pure number. It's a pure number plus a number times the Hilbert transform. So what we obtain at this point is something that will be shown later on to be exactly the same thing as the Landau damping term. You see that now if you plug that Hilbert transform in the resulting equation later on, this will bring some dissipation. Okay, because of course it's not reversible. In Fourier space, the Hilbert transform, which has this definition as an integral operator, is just sine of I times sine of k times the Fourier transform. So it's indeed non-reversible due to the sine of k. So now, if you look at the equation that was our main goal, which is here, you see that in order to solve the resulting equation, I have still to make use of some other constraints, such like the electric neutrality, and which implies this kind of equation. And then, with this kind of equation, I obtain a relation between electric potential and magnetic field disturbance. So now, this equation involves non-local operators. As you see, L, now, that arises in this equation, is just the sum of weighted operator GR being defined here. And it's easy. You see, you have here L minus 1. It's absolutely no problem, since the Hilbert transform has the property that its inverse is the minus times the operator, the Hilbert operator. So you can define without any problem L minus 1. So at this level, it's easy then to have a closed form for the integral of d psi of f bar 1 over d v parallel. And you get a closed form in terms of d perp squared. So you see here a nonlinear term. And here again contains a nonlinear quantity because it's the perturbation of the magnetic field intensity and this non-local term here. So now, how do we get an equation for B? So you see here, the goal is to obtain a dynamical equation for B naught. At this level, we are not yet finished. So I spare you the details, but the technique is to go to the next order again, F4, and apply the same kind of operator as we did before, meaning the multiplication by V perp and the integral of a velocity space. And using Faraday's equation, you have a relation of this form here that involves B2. And at this point, you could be scared because you say, well, I want an equation for B0. B1 is 0, it's okay, but I have B2 here, and B2 is unknown. So you just hope that things will go well. And it turns out that there is kind of a god of asymptotics that says that with this kind of technique, whatever you do, you always close the equation in the end. And it's a good verification of your algebra, actually, that the B2 that will appear here cancels out of the final equation. So you just do the same kind of technique. I will spare the details. And obtain relations. What can we say here? If you look at the equation that appears with S2 here, you see you recognize terms that now look quite nice. Second derivative of B0 times some term here that looks like a dispersion term. And you have a dt of B0 here. So it looks like we are on a good track for obtaining a large-scale equation. And indeed, if you sum up the various contributions and you note that the term involving B2 cancels out, and if you write now that F1 bar, the average over phi of the distribution function F1, also involves something which is F bar brackets, which is the average over the direction of propagation, you can write the following equation. So it happens that what is only determined, where is it? What is only determined is d xi of f1 bar. So f1 bar is determined up to a function which do not depend on xi. So this function depends a priori on the transverse coordinates, right? And it's always a good thing in asymptotics not to put to zero the constants of integration. For example, if you take Rabenauer convection, if you look at the large-scale dynamics of roles, and if you forget about constants of integration, you right away forget about mean flow terms, mean flow that are driven by curvature of roles, for example. So here the same thing happens. If you forget about this constant, then you miss some physics, and you will see later on that actually this physics can be important if you have long wave trains that will drive these constants. And so for to be on the safe side, I say that F1 bar is a tilde quantity which do not depend, which do not have constant terms in psi, plus a mean term, which depends only on the transverse coordinates. And when the smoke clears, I mean, what you get is an equation for B0, which has this form. So d by dt of B0 time derivative. Here, a term that is a dispersive term. As you say here, d by, there is a second derivative, but here you take the cross product of B0 by x. So it, instead of being dissipative, it will just be dispersive. You have a transverse gradient of P tilde. I will come back to P tilde a little bit later on. It's a transverse pressure. And I have a nonlinear term in the multiplied by d by d xi, the direction of propagation, which is of this form, b times P tilde plus this quantity. I will come back later on it. So this P tilde is this quantity. It's a pressure corrected by these kinetic operators here, and multiplied by this fluctuating magnetic field intensity. So you see that since A contains B squared, the equation you have here contains B squared times B. So it's a cubic nonlinearity, and it's a derivative term in front of it. So that's why this equation is called derivative nonlinear Schrödinger, because it contains dispersion, cubic nonlinearity, and a derivative. But it's not an envelope equation. It's a long wave equation. And in addition to this cubic nonlinearity and to these kinetic terms, you have this advection by this mean velocity, which obeys a specific equation I will mention a little bit later. The dispersion term here is perfectly determined in terms of the microscopic equilibrium quantities, like the pressure, parallel and perpendicular pressure of the ions. You can forget about other terms which are proportional to 1 over omega e, because the cyclotron frequency of the electrons is much larger than the cyclotron frequency of the ions, so these terms will be completely negligible compared to this one, and so the dominant contribution for the dispersion term takes this form. So the fluctuating component of B parallel is expressed in terms of the transverse component of B naught by the divergence-less condition. And an important remark is that for the cases where your Alvin wave is has the form of a pulse, which is localized in space, then if the localization is if the extension of the pulse is small enough, then all the mean fields I was mentioning before can be are actually zero. And so the system here you get is a system where U bracket can be neglected, is almost zero, and you get a closed equation in that sense. And this closed equation was obtained by Rogista in 71 with the same kind of technique, except he was performing everything in Fourier space, which makes the algebra a little bit more confusing. Except what we did here is to go a little bit further. I will show you later the equation you can get for the coupling with U bracket here. This U bracket, I will comment on its usefulness later on. So the important point here is that this equation contains these operators, which actually model whose imaginary part whose part proportional to the Hilbert transform model the influence of lambda damping of wave particle resonance. And these terms are actually, as you can see, acting on A tilde, which is the magnetic field disturbance. So for an Alvin wave which is not perturbed, this term A will be a constant, and the Hilbert transform of the constant is zero, so no Landau damping. So what it means that the Landau damping acts only when the Alvin wave is perturbed, and actually it acts only on the ion acoustic waves driven by the modulation of the Alvin wave. And so you can immediately then conclude that if you have a plasma for which the beta, which is the ratio of the pressure to the magnetic pressure, is much smaller than TE over TI, then the damping of ion acoustic waves is negligible, and so you can neglect these kinetic terms in the equation here. I mean the imaginary part of these kinetic terms in the pressure term. And the KDNLS equation, I call it K for kinetic derivative nonlinear Schrödinger equation that I have derived here, reduces to a standard equation called the DNLS, the derivative nonlinear Schrödinger equation, which now is perfectly reversible in time, I mean, doesn't contain any dissipation, and has this very nice simple form. So from the Vlasov-Maxwell system, you get directly a very closed form, simple equation for the evolution of Alvin wave propagating parallel to the magnetic field. The dissipative term is hidden here in these operators, because if you look at the form of these operators here, they are proportional to G, and G contains the Hilbert transform here. And if you work out the algebra, for example, if you linearize the equation, you find that at the end you will get that these terms lead to a dissipation. Okay, so you multiply I absolute value of K times K. I mean, you have a comment, Carrie? So, but I mentioned it's not a linear, it's not a dissipation which acts linearly on the wave amplitude. Why? Because if you have an unperturbed Alvin wave, it's known to dissipate. At least on this very large scale. I mean, if you look in the plasma physics books and if you look at the dispersion relation I was mentioning yesterday, the full, I mean, dispersion tensor, horrible dispersion tensor that I didn't write. But if you study it, you find that there is an exponentially small dissipation due to Landau damping of the Alvin wave. But on this, in this large-scale framework, where I suppose that I have a long wavelength for the Alvin wave, this exponential small term is negligible. I mean, it doesn't appear. So I have this equation. This equation has been shown by Kaup and Newell in 78 to be integrable by inverse scattering. And I will just mention here a few details about this equation that will have some implication for the physics of this problem. So this Alvin wave, this DNLS equation, admits exact solution in the form of circularly polarized Alvin waves that propagate along magnetic field. And this circularly polarized wave takes this form here. And if you linearize the DNLS equation about these solutions, you find a dispersion relation that leads to modulational instability in cases which are mentioned here. For example, for right-hand polarized waves, the wave will be modulationally unstable when the beta of the plasma is larger than 1, basically. And when it's left-hand polarized, vice versa, the Alvin wave will be modulationally unstable when beta is smaller than 1. In this kind of equation, since I have considered that I sit on a wave propagating a certain velocity, I will not be able to capture decay instability, which involve, or you know, parametric kinds of instability, which involve also counter-propagating waves. And here I'm sitting on a wave, and I look at this evolution, so the waves that propagate in the opposite direction are not coupled to my wave. So I am only able to describe in this framework the modulational instabilities. And modulational instabilities means that if you have a wave train, then in the end you can have envelope solitons forming. Actually, you can derive NLS from DNLS and show the dynamics actually is very nicely reproduced by this envelope dynamics. So immediately, when people have studied this equation, they tried to relate it to observations of solar wind turbulence and, you know, wave profiles that they observed in the solar wind, and they realized that the predictions were not right. I mean, especially the one that concerns the transition around beta equal 1. You know, this equation I mentioned here is singular for beta equal 1. So in the context of fluid equations, this singularity is easy to understand. In the usual MHD equations, you have not only Alvin waves, but you have also sun waves. And when beta equal 1, the speed, the phase velocity of the Alvin wave and that of the sun wave coincide. And so, of course, then in that case, the reductive perturbative expansion I was performing doesn't work anymore, because you have a degeneracy. The kernel contains two eigenvectors associated with the same eigenvalue, and you cannot write anymore. Now, in that case, three, because you have the two associated with the two polarization of the Alvin wave plus the one associated with the sun wave. And so instead of getting one equation, you get a coupled system of equation, one of this form for the Alvin wave, coupled to a density here instead of b squared, and the density obeys an equation like Burgers. So this singularity is well understood, but people doing plasma physics did not believe it existed. And indeed, that's what I'm going to show later on. If you bring kinetic effects or lambda damping into play, this lambda damping will remove this singularity. So before going to that point, I want to mention just that what are the form of the solitons I was mentioning? This equation is integrable by event scattering. It has a lot of solutions, one parameter and two parameter families of soliton solutions. Here I give one example with the formula here. And if you are interested in that equation, there is a very good review article by Mulus and Hada in this volume here, Nonlinear Waves in Space Plasmas. And so you see here that the envelope of the wave has this form with this 1 over hyperbolic cosine form. So it's just to show, I mean, the kind of solutions you get. So now if I go back to the case where electron temperature is not much higher than ion temperature, then I have to consider the damping of these ion acoustic waves that will now, when I rewrite the equation in a simpler form, take the form of this Hilbert transform times B squared. You know, I have taken all these operators, L, M, N, and ordered all the terms, real part, imaginary part, I mean, terms proportional to a constant, terms proportional to the Hilbert transform, and in the end, I get two coefficients, alpha and gamma, and the one proportional to H describes the damping due to, yes? B is the magnetic field, is a vector, yeah. The vector magnetic field. This equation is an equation for now a complex number. I have written here, if you remember, I have my wave propagating along the x direction. So the by plus I dz is called b here in this formulation. So it's a complex notation. Before I had a vector notation for the two transverse components, now I have complex notation. By the way, this the fact that I have two independent coefficients here, independent fields, which means that there is a an eigenspace associated to the eigenvalue of the Alvin wave velocity of dimension 2, is the reason why you don't obtain KdV. If you had a just a one-dimensional eigenspace, then the equation you would get from this kind of asymptotics would be KdV, for sure. But KdV is degenerate here due to the fact that instead of having only one component, I have two components, they are coupled, and then as a result of this degeneracy, the resulting equation is called GNLS, which is here. So as I mentioned, when B squared is constant, this term is zero, and there is no lambda damping. However, the lambda damping is present in the case of modulation, and people have called that nonlinear lambda damping. I think it's a wrong denomination, but nevertheless, you can find that in the literature. Nonlinear because it acts only when B squared is non-zero, non-constant. Two main points about the properties of this equation. The instability of the circularly polarized wave for all parameter values, in the case that we had before, you had cases where the wave could be stable or unstable. Here it turns out that the presence of this damping destabilizes the wave in all cases. So it's a case where damping does not stabilize but destabilizes. So for example, now even in the case beta smaller than 1, then for right-hand polarization, the wave can be unstable. And second result is that for typical parameters, the instability in the right-hand polarized case is suppressed for beta larger than 1, so which means that then in that case, the resonance or the transition you have between beta smaller than 1 and beta larger than 1 disappears. The quasi-resonance survives only in the special case when the temperature of the electrons strongly exceeds that of the ions, which corresponds to the fluid limit. So now you have a property on this equation here, is that you have conservation of helicity. So if you look at the evolution, for example, of No, I'm a little bit confused here. Well, what I want to say is that as a consequence of this Hilbert transform here, the dynamics in the nonlinear regime will show kind of an inverse cascade. And the inverse cascade means that the wave energy tends to accumulate towards smaller values of k. And here I'm a little bit confused. I don't want to go into the details of that. So, and you have people like Medvedev and Diamond and collaborators that have looked at solutions of this equation here, numerical solutions, and they show a wealth of very complicated solutions, arc polarized waves, rotational discontinuities, and it is interesting to look at the properties of this equation in the turbulent regime, because as you see, dissipation now is not restricted to be at very small scales. This operator here is only an operator of order one. Usual dissipation is like a Laplacian of order 2. But since the Hilbert operator is of order 0, you get a dissipation that now affects wave numbers in the middle of the nonlinear range. I mean, you cannot really say that dissipation is restricted to be at very small scale. So this can have a strong impact on the properties of turbulence. Also, the fact that it is a nonlinear term might be quite important. So there is some things to understand here. I mean, what will be the weakly turbulent regime of this equation is not clear. I mean, do we still have an inertial range, for example? It's an open question. I don't know. Yes? Beta here?
Yeah.
Beta will enter the beta of the plasma, you mean?
Sorry?
The beta of the plasma?
Yeah, the beta.
Oh, okay. The beta will come in the coefficient alpha and gamma, and now it doesn't take a simpler form. I mean, there is no resonance anymore. So remember the equation that I have written before contains something like 1 over 4 times 1 minus beta. Yeah, so now instead of having just a singularity at beta equal 1, now you have smooth coefficients which depends in a complicated way, which depend on beta in a complicated way, but which do not display any singularity anymore. So alpha and beta are complicated coefficients which involve beta, temperatures of species, and everything. So it's beta is like a parameter of my equilibrium plasma, and alpha and gamma contain are parameters that I don't want to explain, which are too complicated to write, but which depend on all parameters of my plasma. My plasma is now not captured only by one single beta parameter, but by other types of parameters. Like you can have different temperatures parallel and perpendicular to the magnetic field for all the species. Everything will be affecting the values of alpha and gamma. So I was mentioning before that the original equation, in the case where you don't have a localized soliton, the localized wave, then involves the mean value of an advection velocity here, u, which has this form here. It turns out that you can push further the expansion, and then it becomes really tedious, but you can solve the problem, and you can find a coupled system of equation that I mentioned here, which now is a generalization of the previous equation to the case where you not only have localized waves, but you have wave packets. And when you have wave packets, you drive these mean values along the direction of propagation by terms which are explicit here, which basically contain transverse gradient. That's why for the 1D situation, this u is 0, but for the, well, almost. But for the multidimensional case, they play a very big role. And one application that we have made with Pierre-Louis Sunem of this system of equation is to capture the filamentation instability of an Alvin wave packet. Well, what happens is that if you have a plain Alvin wave propagating in the medium, you are not only interested in what happens in the longitudinal direction, but also on the instability in the transverse direction. And what happens is that the instability in the transverse direction, called filamentation instability, is driven by this. Is actually depends a lot on this u bracket terms. And as a result, you can from this rigorously derived equation, you can derive a nonlinear Schrödinger equation for the modulation of the transverse of the amplitude of your wave packet and modulation in the transverse direction. And what happens is that this instability in the transverse direction can lead to, in certain situation, collapse of your Alvin wave packet. So it's like for a laser beam, you have this transverse instability that can lead to focusing, and the energy of your wave then concentrate into thin filaments. But what I mentioned here is that this is only possible when you have extended wave packet in the direction of the magnetic field, because this dynamics is really driven by these permeability forces in the transverse direction that occur here. So, but I will not talk about that here. So, I still have a few minutes. I want to talk about the second part of my project, which was to use this kind of derivation to now try to provide a closure for my fluid equations. As I mentioned, the main problem is the determination of the heat flux parameters, Q parallel and Q perpendicular, which are recalled here. As we have done this asymptotic expansions, we have a complete knowledge of all the distribution functions and all fields at each level of the higher epsilon expansion. And so it's just a trivial matter to bring that together and calculate now what is Q parallel and Q perpendicular. So if you calculate it, you find that, for example, which is reassuring, is that you find this kind of relation, which can be obtained also from the fluid formalism of the CGL equation. It's a simple consequence of a linearized version of CGL, so nothing new here at this level. But if you rewrite now these heat fluxes in terms of temperature fluctuations, and here there is a slight trick I will mention probably next week, that you don't want to use condition of what you don't want to use too early in the expansion is the fact that you have quasi neutrality. You want to ensure quasi neutrality only in the end of your calculation, and so by doing some simple algebraic tricks, you find that you can express the heat flux components here in terms of temperature fluctuations in this form, where W here is the usual response plasma function of the plasma, which exactly the same form as the G function I was mentioning before. So this relation is non-local. And of course, at this point, it's not very useful, you could say, because first of all, it's a linearized form and non-local form, not very usable to get an equation for Q. But if you now make the approximation that W can be expanded in Padé coefficient approximants, then you can simplify these equations in a way that then, after some modeling has been done, you end up having a simple equation for Q, which here is linear, which determines a closed form for Q as a function of T, and which contains the information of Landau damping in a very simple way. So this equation for Q is actually the linearized form of an exact equation that you can derive at the next order of the fluid hierarchy. And moreover, it contains the modelization of this of the next order moment, which is called R, and that has been done by Snyder, Hammett, and Dolan in 97. And so we obtain a complete agreement between the approach of Snyder, which was based on guiding center, and with this formula. Moreover, we are able now to extend this formalism to more complicated situations. And what has been done is to now use this set of equation together with the fluid equation I was deriving yesterday. Forget about the Maxwell equation completely. And with this closed fluid system, you can play the same trick, derive a long-wave reductive perturbative expansion for the Alvin wave. And in the end, there is kind of a very nice surprise, is that you get exactly the same kind of system from the fluid equations, with the only difference that the function W that enters these coefficients, the response function of the plasma, is now replaced by the Padé approximants you had put in this formula to get this equation. So if you take Padé over approximants of order 4, the approximation is very good for a large range of beta parameters, including the beta around 1. And the net result is that you are able to then prove that the predictions of this fluid closure will be compatible with the solution of the Vlasov-Maxwell system, compatible for the dynamics of an Alvin waves over times of order 1 over epsilon 4. So this corresponds to the long wave dynamics, including the weakly nonlinear dynamics. It's not only restricted to a linear prediction at this level. Note that the equation for Q is linear, and it's enough to ensure that the resulting weakly nonlinear equation will be correctly captured. So there is a lot of work to be done now to kind of go a little bit further and test the closure in nonlinear regimes and involving not only modulational instability but also parametric instabilities. I mean, there are a lot of things to be done, but it's I think a promising road towards having the simplified versions of plasma equations that do not have the complication of Vlasov-Maxwell, but still capture the main basic phenomena such as the wave-particle resonance provided by Landau damping, and we can even add finite Larmor radius corrections. I will talk about that next week. And so I think it's a good place to stop. I have a few references here that you can take on the web when the talk will be put there. So thank you very much.